Just declare the meeting open at 9:32, councillors. Start by acknowledging the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet this morning. I'd like to pay respect to elders past, present and emerging, and extend that respect to any other Indigenous Australians who are present here today. Just a quick housekeeping note, if we need to evacuate, follow the CEO. No? Now, I would ask you to remain calm and obviously follow any directions that are made through the chair here. The emergency exits are marked and they're through the gallery doors on the left and down the stairwell to exit onto Bloomfield Street. The public conduct at meetings is covered under Section 32 of our standing orders, and just a quick reminder for those in the gallery today that not without prior approval of the chairperson can you make an audio or video recording or take any photographs. We ask you to remain quiet, not disrupt the meeting in any way, not to bring any signs, placards or items that may cause hazard or interfere with other persons who are present here. Be suitably dressed, turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting if you do need to take a call. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with one or all of these requirements that I may, with or without such warning, ask them to please leave the meeting and not return for a period as chairperson decides, and that could actually include future meetings. Leave of absence. Councillors, I have just been advised of an apology for Councillor Gleeson, so we'll note that apology. I haven't been advised of any other leaves of absence. So with that, we'll move straight on to our devotional segment and ask a member of the Minister's Fellowship, Pastor Peter Grieve of C3 Church, Redland Bay, to please lead us in a brief devotional segment. Thanks, Peter.
How you doing, everybody? Thanks for the opportunity. Wanted to read a few scriptures out this morning. I don't often do that, but I don't know if any of you ever wanted a miracle, but this is Jesus' first miracle in 2 John. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Why do you involve me?" Jesus replied, "My hour is not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw it out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you've saved the best till last." So 3 points there that I just want to touch on. If you want to get a miracle from God, you've got to invite him to your wedding, invite him to your party, or more so, invite him into your world. So once he's a part of your world, then that's one of the steps we need to take. Second thing is do whatever he says. I'm sure the servants thought he was off his tree when he said, "Fill these big, about 1 metre to 1,200 high, these big concrete water pots, and to fill them with water." But, you know, sometimes we just got to act on what we know is right inside. And the third thing was work hard, because faith is a verb, it's a doing word, and it's action. It's words in action. So if you want to get a miracle, those 3 things will help. And I want to finish with this, because I like a bit of red wine, and I'm sure most of us do. And a cheap wine is, let's say between 2 and 5 years. Better wine's between, say, 5 and 15 years. And if you really want to get into a nice red, then you're nodding your head. You get in over in that longer bracket. It's more palatable. And so in this case, Jesus saved the best till last. And I take that on as personal. As we get older and as we mature, we should be getting more palatable, not grumpier, not more obnoxious, but just a bit better and easier to work with. So I hope that helps you today. And I want to say all the best for Christmas. Stay safe over Christmas. And I probably should pray. Okay, Father, we just thank you. Thank you for Redland City, Lord. Thank you for the councillors and members of staff and for the members in the gallery today. We just pray that wisdom would rest on all of the decision makers' shoulders, that the right choices and the direction, Lord, would be led by you, Father. Just bless these people, I pray, in Jesus' mighty name. Amen. God bless you guys.
So, councillors, the next item on our agenda is our declaration of interest on any items that will be discussed today. There are none that I'm aware of, so we'll move straight on to our recognition of achievement, and we have a couple. I'd like to hand over to Councillor Mitchell in recognising Luke Harvey.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. My great pleasure, and Luke's mum can't be here today, so I think it's my job to make sure maximum embarrassment is passed upon this wonderful overachiever, and I'm proud to call him a friend of mine. Luke, stand up and let everyone see you for a start. Yeah. Oh, you can come on through.
Come on,
sure.
Down.
Yeah, come on through. You can stand beside us. That's right. Yeah, stand beside me. That's great, mate. Luke has lived in the Redlands for his whole life and started triathlon in 2012. Started as a cross-country runner and went to the local Sharks Triathlon Club, an excellent club they happened to be a part of, for some running advice as they had free afternoon sessions. So I also love a bargain. The club encouraged his first triathlon entry, lending Luke a bike, and this was the first time he had ridden a bike with gears. So that was pretty cool. In 2012, not that long ago. Just less than a month later, he completed his first triathlon at Raby Bay. And as you know, we've got lucky to have three of those each year, and placed sixth in February 2012. To see if this was just lucky or not, he entered a second race in Luke Harrop, which is down the Gold Coast, and he placed second. He was hooked. This is the start of his love of triathlon and triathlon's love of Luke. 2016, not just being a great triathlete, he was honoured to be awarded the Pierre de Coubertin Award by the AOC, recognising achievements and demonstration of values which are consistent with the Olympic movement. 2017, Luke stepped it up a gear and was crowned for his first world championship in Rotterdam. In the 16-19 age group World Triathlon Sprint Championship. So that was world championship number one and was celebrated here in Chambers. So in 2018, just another small thing, he was honoured to carry the Queen's baton through Cleveland. So another wonderful achievement. So that brings us up to today's honour. So, well, he's done it again. And in September on the Gold Coast, Luke defended his world title of 2017, so is now a dual world title holder, again fighting hard in an amazing competition down there to take it out again, so a repeat. So I want the city today to not only commend Luke for those great wins, but also what he demonstrates that if you work hard enough, and yeah, you can achieve anything, and it's his commitment to training and his commitment to excellence. So this is a young man of our city. These are the leaders of tomorrow, and if people work half as hard as Luke, then we're going to be a pretty damn good place into the future. So congratulations, Luke, on your second world championship, and I'd like everyone to give him a round of applause. And his mum has also made sure that I get some photos, so with everyone's indulgence.
do a sprint distance triathlon. So that's a 750-metre swim, a 20K ride, and a 5K run, which is the distance that I do best at. That's what the world champ race is. The previous couple of events are a little bit shorter and like mixed up format, but it's all a point system. And hopefully I'll be able to qualify for the junior elite category, which is like the next step above where I currently am. So that one feeds into your open elite. Thank you to the council for your support. The last couple of years, you've helped out with my uniforms, you've just helped out with events, and being able to put on events such as Raby Bay Tri. That's one where I started, it's where a lot of people have started, so it'd be awesome if we can continue to support that one. And just thank you for the recognition. That's a great place to live. Oh, and thank you, Jamal.
We'll be seeing this on the internet.
Thank you to Mum and Dad for all that they've done. There's a lot that I can't say that they do to help. There's so much that's just behind the scenes, getting me places, keeping me in line, making sure that I'm doing the dishes, mowing the lawn, all the stuff to keep me grounded, and they certainly do a good job of that. So.
What's your career path?
I'm hoping to go down as a professional athlete, but at the moment I'm working as a disability carer, and I'm also working at a cafe, so I like a little bit of variety there, and I'm really enjoying helping out others, and it's a really rewarding job, so I've taken that up and decided I'm going to pursue that one. No, because if I do that, then I've got to go away, and the training just can't be done when I'm away, to be able to have the flexibility that my current jobs do.
Thanks, councillors. Look, I'm just going to just remind you back to the declarations that there is obviously some responsibilities that are outlined in your agenda under the Division 5 of the Local Government Act 2009. It reminds you of your responsibilities under that Act and when declarations should be made through this meeting process and how they should be made. Okay, receipt and confirmation of minutes. Councillors, may I have a mover and second that the minutes of the general meeting of the 24th of October 2018 be confirmed. Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Edwards. Any items of correctness? There being none, put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you. Matters outstanding from minutes of previous general meeting. I'll ask CEO to give us an update.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. There are three items outstanding from previous meetings. The first one is the changes to the expense reimbursement provision of facilities for councillors policy. Now, I understand this may be taken off the table today. There's a second item there about making of various local laws. Those three local laws come today, today's agenda, in 12.5, 12.6, 12.7. And the third one is a petition requesting Wynnum Creek priority development area be progressed, and that'll come as a future report to council.
Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, I'd like to be a procedural motion.
Yep.
That item 7.1 on changes to policy poll 3076, expenses reimbursement provision of facilities for councillors, be lifted off to the table to be discussed at today's meeting as a new item 12.8 under the agenda reports for organisation services.
That's procedural motion, Councillor Elliott. Offers the motion, you're in favour. All right, public participation. I don't know that I've been advised of anyone that wants to address council this morning. I'm just checking the gallery. So we can move straight into our petitions and presentations. Councillor Hughes, do you have a petition to present?
Oh, pardon me. presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to be doing a or giving a short presentation on justice across the generations. I went to a conference on the weekend, Queensland Justices Association, as they celebrated 100 years. As a JP, I was keen to attend the centennial conference, Justice Across the Generations, hosted by the Queensland Justice Association, the QJA, on Saturday 3rd of November at the Brisbane Convention Centre. I was very happy personally paying for the conference and the celebratory dinner as the backbone of our judicial system, the QJA turned 100 years old. With 250 delegates attending the conference, this was obviously a Queensland conference, so they came from everywhere. It was with sheer delight and pride that the MC for the day was my very own Ormiston resident, Mr. Graham Morehouse, who is a QJA director and also chairman of the Marketing and Communications Working Group. So amazing where our Redland City folk pop up. Graham did an amazing job of keeping the day on track. He also presented in the breakout sessions and he featured in the training and professional development videos. Luckily, he is a talented JP. Acting is not his vocation, but he did look the part as a studious lawyer, and again, I was amazed at the depth of talented individuals we have in our city who volunteer so much of their time. When people step up in the various roles, we see so many in our community. This gentleman was not just in his suit with his gavel ready to lead the day, but he also lent a hand, again volunteering, to present these professional development videos. The keynote speakers were the Honourable Yvette Darth, MP, State Attorney General and Minister for Justice, the Honourable Chief Justice Catherine Holmes, and Lord Mayor of Brisbane Graham Quirk, all of whom spoke with passion about the value of Justices of the Peace and Commissioners for Declarations. Highlighting the tremendous contribution by strong and committed volunteers for the past 100 years, with the statement that most stood out to me from Chief Justice Holmes, that if JPs and CDECs were to stop offering their volunteer services, the legal system as we know it would grind to a halt. There are so many volunteers across our community. Just amazing how much is done on a volunteer basis. The topics covered on the day were wills and enduring documents, the Queensland JP program, technology and the JP. As we talk about smart cities, everywhere we go, technology is impacting. Police and court documents, training and personal development, talking about my generation, and my generation can be anything from the 1 to 5 year olds up to the 100 year olds now, which was really interesting. And the really important one that's the session that spoke to me was innovations in domestic and family violence matters. The DV discussion held the audience for the full hour, and we know how hard that is, especially in the afternoon. It was led by Peter Brandon. Please excuse me while I take a moment to say he was the Acting Director, Domestic and Family Violence Court Project, Department of Justice and Attorney General. It was an extremely respectful and enlightening presentation on how we can support the process in these situations, which unfortunately are all too frequently happening. If you are interested in DV in any way or a speaker of a presentation, this gentleman was outstanding. He was a young man. The afternoon session opened with an incredible story across the generations, and I know many of us are interested in history, and here's the history of 100 years. And I would just like to say that noting that in 1932, a meeting of female justices voted to accept an invitation to become a part of the QJA rather than establish their own separate association. How lucky were the blokes on that day? As such, back in 1932, thank you. At the gala dinner, it was important to note that our Redland City was nominated for Branch of the Year. It was, again, across Queensland, Caboolture and Redland City, and those very busy people at Caboolture just pipped us at the post. And the Member of the Year, one of the nominations there was our very own Mr. Greg Smith from Redland City. So we really do punch above our weight. So often we go somewhere. The MC, the branch, the best member. It was really an amazing thing. I just had one more paragraph. Just the JPs in the shopping centres. Well done to all of them across our city. They are so valuable. And the sponsor of the day, Sirame. The raffle, Sirame. Our city again was leading. And I had no idea when I signed up to go to this conference how valuable it was. And I just thought it was really important to note our Redland city there. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Presentation. Thanks, Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And just to councillors and officers, today I want to give a brief overview of two professional development conferences I've attended in Melbourne this year. One is the Future of Local Government Summit, which is in May, and then the National Sustainable Communities Summit in September, both of which are hosted by MAV, the Municipal Association of Victoria, which is the equivalent to the LGAQ. The main feature of the two conferences can be summed up best by a moment in 2017 when delegates were all asked to stand. Now, these are people from mayors, councillors, officers, and people interested in the future of local government in Australia. The 200 or so of them were asked while they were standing, who's confident in the process of democracy and the way we're heading in Australia? Are we going in the right direction? And those who thought that we were going in the right direction were asked to sit. And not one single person in the delegation sat. So the delegates there decided that they needed to declare a standing emergency, and they created a declaration of which has become the Future of Local Government Declaration, which I'm going to attach to this link. And it's about encouraging participative community engagement back in the process of democracy. The declaration acknowledges that over 100 years ago, Australia was seen as the most exciting, innovative centre for democratic innovation in the world. A century ago, we were a nation with more cooperatives, mutuals, and worker-owned entities on the planet. And our Commonwealth of Australia was the result of hard-won fights for collective decision-making that was unique in the world. An example in our local area is all those School of Arts halls where people rallied together and built things out of the ground themselves using their own funds. It's interesting to note that in the last 100 years, especially since the 75 years at the end of the World War II, that we've demutualised so many of those Commonwealth-making entities. And in the last 28 years, since the 1990s, we've further privatised much of the public institutions, and successive governments have retreated from many of the regulatory functions that those institutions used to provide for citizens' benefits. Sure, these changes have resulted in the modern world's most unique phase of Australia's 27 years of unceasing economic growth. However, the pre-conference literature for the National Sustainable Community Summit states, in some ways in Australia we remain the lucky country, but here too we are struggling with economic upheaval, rising inequality, loss of social cohesion, increased rates of loneliness and mental illness, and serious environmental threats, notably climate change. Many Australians are losing faith in our basic democratic institutions and withdrawing from active participation in civic and cultural life. Our reputation as an inclusive, tolerant, and compassionate society is under threat. So, the Future of Local Government Summit, held in May, highlighted some stunning examples of what people are doing to bring back common sense, as it were. Andrew Walker, who's a policy researcher from the United Kingdom's Local Government Information Unit, spoke about the need for local governments to design beyond devolution and toward resilience, inviting communities to participate in that process. Genevieve Barlow and Jeff Park presented on Renewable Newstead 2021, supporting the development of vibrant and informed sustainable community initiatives. So their community are actually getting local people who own blocks of land and backing onto parks. They're linking up and finding new ways to innovate the use of public open spaces, rethink sporting infrastructure, the provision of local energy systems, and they're doing it collaboratively, cooperatively with their various levels of government. Ian McBurney, the director and executive officer from Beehive Cooperative, which is from the brilliant Bendigo community region, they've created a world-first place-based sharing economy cooperative. So basically, that's an online environment where people can share information, and by getting access to that information, they're hacking alternatives so local people can keep local dollars in their local economy by collaborating across businesses, across accommodation options, and they're really attracting a lot of people from around the, certainly around Victoria. A lot of Melbourneites are moving up there. It's a very creative, dynamic place, so keep your eye on that one. I've got some links to videos that I shot there. Also, Mandurah Mayor Rhys Williams did an amazing presentation on how to be community-led using asset-based community development to source a whole heap of information from their citizens in order to make better decisions for their organisation, and that was part of his whole electoral thing. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes in the next election, whether the community comes on the journey, but it was exciting to see these sorts of things. I've got a few links from some of the videos that I've filmed and produced from that conference that I did as a volunteer, and also some links to the Future of Local Government Summit, which goes back to 2006. So some amazing work, and all of their links and presentations are available. And in September, so this is moving on to the second one, sorry I would take up time otherwise on another day, but I'll keep it brief. The National Sustainable Communities Summit was hosted by Municipal Association of Victoria, Village Well, Sustain, the Australian Food Network, and Transition Australia. A different conference, but related to the same initiative. This was a deepening of those asset-based community development practices and a phenomenal processes that are happening right throughout Australia that you wouldn't necessarily know about. That's why I think it's worthwhile mentioning it here. Julie Miller-Markoff, again from the Bendigo Beehive model, talked about how the online portal that they're creating is ripe for export and to other communities. It's a cooperative, and one of the focuses about cooperatives is that they enable and encourage other cooperatives to do mutually, reciprocally good work. Judy Clark did a case study on tiny houses and showed some awesome trends happening in that space. And Somalian refugee Miriam Issa spoke about her sense of isolation in her own community in Brighton, and then opened up her house as a safe place for women and other members of the community to have conversations that have changed attitudes and inspired a whole heap of new projects. Most notable of all for me was the work of Michelle Bowens, who's a Belgian thinker who retired from his normal corporate job and has since been working across the planet to connect people up into collectives of peers. He's the founder of the Peer-to-Peer Foundation, and the thing that these peers all have in common is a desire to reclaim the commons, which is the collectively owned resources that we all need in order to stay alive, things like water and mountains and the way we use all of the stuff that we need. He identified that there's been a lot of market failure and state failure, and that what is happening in this online space is people are getting together and coming up with innovative solutions. It might be to do with governance, it might be to do with mobility and transport, and as peers are coming up with new and interesting, exciting new opportunities, they're commodifying them, turning them into viable opportunities that are then being delivered in the real world. There might be things like food, regenerative food processing it, and so forth. And he's really designing for a future beyond capitalism. It might sound strange, but he did point out in an interview that I was able to do with him that in 6th century Rome, 12th century Japan, 15th century China, empires and large groups of people fighting in a competition for resources destroyed their entire landscapes, and he has a cautionary tale about that and believes that the reclamation of the commons by participative citizens is going to be the only viable option for the future of us as citizens, and certainly as representatives. I think it's worthwhile sharing this back to us, because while I had to fly down to Melbourne to do these on a regular basis, I'll also note that one of the most exciting innovations that Redland City Council has adopted was when Alan Beard came back from the 2015 conference that I went to, talking about the benefit of citizen juries, and we know that we've applied that in a very meaningful way that gave us some solutions to an intractable issue that was useful for us. I'll pull it up won't be short, but there's a bit more that I had to say, but I'm going to just share some video links and also links to the reports if anyone wants to discuss this with me, and also the declaration itself. I've raised it previously before. I just think it's worth us all being aware of it across the nation. These are the people who are doing the most exciting stuff, I believe, on behalf of citizens, and I highly encourage people to be aware of the very practical things that are being done in that space. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen and allowing me to report back on what is, I think, a great opportunity for personal development. Thanks to Council for providing that. Cheers.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Order of business, councillors. Is there any motion to alter the order of business? There being none, we go straight to 12.1, which is our annual financial statements, 17-18. Can I have a mover and seconder, please? Move, Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Mitchell.
I'm happy to move 12.1, annual financial statements, and as usual, I'd like to pass over to our CFO for a comprehensive comprehensive talk on it. Yeah, brief. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Comprehensive brief on it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you, thank you, Councillor, for the opportunity. It gives me great pleasure to table the annual financial statements, both for the parent entity, Redland City Council, and the consolidated version. So it's probably worth Council noting that the financials have been through Audit Committee. These are the QAO certified financials, so we're all finished and done. And from an audit perspective, Redland City Council's had a great year this year. So Council may recall at the last general meeting it noted the final report from the Queensland Audit Office. That report is linked to these financials, and these financials feed into the annual report that's later in your agenda. So from a, don't know whether you particularly want a comprehensive discussion about it, but from a sort of financial perspective, I think it shows that Council's still got a very strong balance sheet. We note the cash flows at the end of the year, we note the assets and the liabilities. From a profit and loss perspective or statement of comprehensive income, I think we've talked in this forum and previous forums about the challenges of depreciation, and we've also noted the closed landfill rehabilitation provision that we diligently maintain our liability on. So those two factors are probably the contributing factor to the operating deficit. But happy to take questions or comments, Madam Mayor, Councillor.
Councillor Edwards.
Just a comment. This is probably a challenge for all councils throughout Australia, and that's with the depreciation expense. Every year as councils grow, that's greater and greater. And as a city of islands, we've got a lot of marine infrastructure, which we know is not cheap, doesn't have the lifespan. And as our population increases and we have to provide more and more, this is going to be an ongoing challenge for this council in particular, but it's a challenge for all councillors across Australia with these as we grow. Depreciation really eats into our resources.
If I could just add that that was actually acknowledged at last week's local government conference, the LGAQ, and a motion was put forward in requesting the government review how depreciation is measured across local government. So I know it's a discussion I've been having for a long time, and certainly we're closing off one cycle now for our financial year, and we've already moved on to our next financial year in a sense. So, but those discussions will continue regardless of financial years, I assume. Any other questions or comments? Councillor Boglari, do you want to sum up?
Oh, I was just going to say that you know, we all get excited when we can put in a bus stop or a new playground or something for our community, but Council delivers fresh water and everything like that. Our range of services that we deliver to Redlands is amazing, but we can't do any of that if our financials aren't right and if we don't get our budgeting right and our allocations correct. So I'd just like to thank our CFO and her team for the last year. The annual financial statements show that, you know, we're in good stead to go forward. And without the work that your team does, the rest of Council can't function. So I just wanted to say thank you. And like the Mayor said at the local government conference, they were talking about cost shifting from the state government. They were talking about depreciation and all the extra pressures that we have now, which all of us, but especially your team, have to get the challenges around. So thank you to the ELT and yourself for the leadership in that area. Thank you.
Thanks, councillors. That was summing up, so I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 12.2, our community financial report. Mover and seconder, thanks. Moved Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. And following on from Councillor Boglari, moving 12.2, the annual community financial report 2017-2018, where we can speak to so many good things that are happening in our city and the dollars and cents being shown here. Thank you.
Any other comments, councillors? Councillor Hughes, just quickly.
Just one very minor comment, and I have raised it offline, but when you actually turn to the document on page 52, it's not named, and we have noted that for anyone in the public, that will be changed. It's just a slight change there. Thank you.
Deborah's going to just respond to that.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you to the Council. Thank you, Council. So this morning the team has sent through a revised attachment, so in the minutes that will show that is indeed the community financial report, so thank you.
Put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Against? That's carried unanimously. 12.3, Audit Committee of October the 4th. Mover, thanks. Mover, Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Very briefly, Mayor Williams. Just to note, well, it's very important, the Audit Committee. We're very pleased to see that Council continue to do well, meeting all its obligations, and this report is just for noting, but it's tremendous that we do well with the external auditors, and we're proud of that. Thank you.
Comments, councillors? Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. I just note that in the audit minute notes, on page at one of the audit committee meeting, but page 63 of the report, just normally with the observers, councillors are listed. I know it's such a minor thing. However, it has previously been that we've been listed on those occasions that we pop in. It's not mandatory that we're there. Thank you.
It's not mandatory, and not all councillors stay for the whole meeting either. So, yeah. Councillors, any other comments? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Item 12.4, mover and seconder, moved Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Golay. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Oh, thank you. I'd like to move 12.4, the adoption of our annual report. Like I said yesterday, this is sort of like the summary, the Bible of the last year of Council and everything that we have achieved, and details, which I'm sure the public will find interesting. And I'd like to pass to the CEO.
So thanks, Councillor Boglari. Firstly, I just wanted to note the refreshed format of the report. We actually are a little later than we were last year because we took some time and worked quite hard actually at making the format a little more user-friendly, community-focused, and a document that is easier to read and understand. So the 17-18 year saw a number of projects and initiatives achieved, and this is really just a snapshot of some of those things that perhaps are a highlight. Certainly the delivery of our largest capital program ever, almost $70 million, $69.1 million. I would probably highlight the renewed focus on waste management, and that focus will continue certainly into this year. There's a lot of discussion around waste management and what councils are facing in terms of the recycling industry. There is and there has been a focus on our education program to reduce our recycling contamination rate down from what is a low 7.2% down to 5%, and the encouragement of taking up green waste bins and even larger recycling bins. So that's certainly kicked off in 17-18 and continues today. There's a focus on our Redlands Coast Fire Management Project. That's still continuing. We'll bring a report to Council to close some of that out, and certainly we'll give you an update on the 56 recommendations, but much of that work actually commenced in 17-18. I'd point out the new Victoria Point Customer Service Centre. I think that's certainly a community-focused initiative, making it easier to do face-to-face business with Council, particularly for those residents in the south of our city and our islands. We commenced our work on the Clay Island car park and recreational boat ramp, which is as you know, in its completion stage right now. We heard earlier the arrival of the Queen's Baton Relay to North Stradbroke Island in particular, and here, but that was certainly a highlight for the community and everyone involved. We've continued to strengthen our partnerships with Quandamooka traditional owners and work closely with Kayak throughout the year in partnership with them. And we've also commenced our first stage of the Redlands Coast Indigiscape Centre at Capalaba. It'd be remiss of me to not mention the almost 1,000 employees that support this city every day and who strive to deliver great services for the city. And I'm really pleased to see in the 17-18 year some of those internal initiatives, such as our reward and recognition program, our new employee survey, so that we understand how our employees are motivated to do their very best. I place an importance on those sorts of metrics to make sure that we're delivering the very things that the community receive. We are the ones who maintain our 820-odd parks, our 70 hectares of sporting ovals. We deliver a food-grade product called water to every resident in the city and visitor to our city. We look after $2.5 billion worth of community assets, plant trees, loan library books, connect communities, market our city and do all those things, which are all summarised in the report. We've progressed our asset management transformation journey. Councillor Edwards spoke of the depreciation challenge earlier. That's certainly part of us addressing that challenge, and we've also commenced a renewed focus on strategic procurement to make sure we deliver value for money for our community. And probably finally, we've launched our new city brand in the 17-18 year, Redlands Coast, Naturally Wonderful. It's a long game relaunching a place brand, but that unifying place brand is set to roll out, and we're seeing that more and more as we establish our place in southeast Queensland and indeed Australia as a city with such rich natural assets. And probably finally, I'd just like to thank the Mayor and all councillors for supporting the organisation deliver its very best, which can be summarised in the annual report 17-18.
Thank you, CEO. Got a couple of comments. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question from one of my residents relating to page 77 of the report. There's a graphic there that shows 23 boat ramps, 15 jetties, etc. The question is, the 40% of our land that is protected, is that land in public ownership, or is that taking the liberty of including privately held land in the 40%, please?
Might be a question on notice.
Thanks, Councillor Tolte. I'd have to take it on notice, but I believe that the 40%, and I'm happy to be to correct this, would be all land that would be protected green space, not just publicly owned land.
Yeah,
including Strat.
Strat is a very big contributing factor to that amount, if I recall. Councillor Bishop?
Just want to say and just observe as a councillor back to the particularly the ELT that this is probably the first year that we've had the current ELT all as a team who are overseeing the organisation. I think it's important to acknowledge that this new format represents a new ELT, and I personally find the environment that we are in very welcome and supportive. And I think as the CEO alluded to, the scale and size of that which needs to be managed by our offices across the city is vast, and that oftentimes people do tend to focus on things when they go wrong. I think this is an opportunity to think about when things go well, and I just want to take a moment to acknowledge how important it is that we get that feedback loop from the community and take a moment to have a look at this, because it's a test of what is planned for what we're doing and the annual report of what we've done in this last year, and it's a chance to look at what are we doing well. And I just want to also mention a specific thing of a few times recently we've got on one of these pages very early on we talk about one team. It's actually on the vision, mission and values, and there's five core values. Second one is one team, and there's been a few instances in the last few weeks where I have really asked for the one team approach to look at complex issues, and the result has been astonishing, and I just want to say back to the organisation, thank you for that. And to the residents and other councillors, when we get positive stories, I think it's important to feed that back in, because I think that helps build a collegiate environment, which is useful. Thank you.
Someone else had their hand up for a comment, Mark. Sorry, Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. Look, I'd just like to congratulate on the layout of this. It's, you know, we often get reports and they're pretty hard to go through, but this is really interesting. I'm going to actually carry one of these around with me. And but there's lots of interesting information and things that a lot of us don't realise. You know, you just open it up and we've got 820 parks. 820. You know what? That's less than 200 people in this city have a park. And no, I think it goes to show that there is a lot of assets we do for the community out there. And I'm just, again, just thankful for the layout. I find it's easy reading, good pickups, and very informative.
Any other comments? If I could probably just thank the CEO for his quick outline. I think at last week's conference as well, often local governments referred to being responsible roads, rates and rubbish, and the new line that came out of that, which is very much indicated by the list of achievements that the CEO has listed, it's the new saying is just roads and rates is rubbish, because we're obviously doing a great deal more than just roads, rates and rubbish these days. And some of that is because we're the closest level of government to the people, and other reasons are that, you know, we have two other levels of government that are sharing their load with us occasionally. But I think the layout, as has been discussed, actually does demonstrate that to the broader community, and hopefully they understand the challenges that we have to make sure our city, Redlands Coast, continues to be a great place for us to live and build community. So back to you, Councillor Boglary, to sum up.
Oh, thank you. I would also like to thank the CEO and all our general managers and everybody else on staff for the work that they've done this year. I think the new format is also representative of a new wave of culture coming through our council, and there's very much that one team approach happening, which Councillor Bishop mentioned, and which of course brings out efficiencies, and that which is better delivery for our community of Redlands. The new format is very clear. You've got the graphs, you've got all the figures. I have always, every year since I've been in here, I've got 10 years of printed annual reports and whatever current one. I know Louise is smirking because I refer to them. And I always have one printed out, and it's quite interesting when you go out in your community and you do have one at your community chats, and you can just show to people that we do so much more, because in Redlands, some of our greatest assets like Moreton Bay and our whatever it is listed in here, 335 k's of coastline, they're our greatest natural assets, but they're also great challenges which Redlands has, which other councils mightn't have that are you know, just off the coast. So well done to the team. It's a great format. Visually, it is appealing, like Councillor Edwards said, but it's also about transparency and accountability, and you've achieved that as well. So thank you very much to the Redlands Council team.
I'll put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 12.5, making of subordinate law number 5, 2015. Can I have a mover and seconder for item 12.5, please? Moved, Councillor Boglary. Seconded, Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglary? No? I believe there might be an amendment proposed to Councillor Mitchell.
Sorry, Mayor. Just looking for my printout of that, sorry, that was sent through to me.
We might be able to bring it up on the screen.
Yeah, bring it up on the screen. Thank you. I think it has been sent around to two councillors. So my proposed amendment is that I'd like to also, another point five, to undertake further community consultation prior to the commencement of enforcement activities in the new regulated parking areas.
Couple of spelling mistakes. That's the amendment we have in front of us, councillors. We now need to vote have a mover and seconder for the amendment. Moved, Councillor Mitchell. Seconded, Councillor Bishop. All right, Councillor Mitchell, would you like to speak to the amendment? And then just reminding councillors that we speak to the amendment first. Once that's, if that's approved, then we speak to the amended motion.
Yes, please. Thank you, Mayor. This is particularly important, the community consultation with the proposed regulated parking mapping for, in my case, North Stradbroke Oak Island and at Toondah Harbour. So that's what's happening today. So we're mapping regulated areas or as part of this suite of local laws. Why are we doing it? Well, the community needs for parking as part of a proper transport system on and off the island. So it's a part of that. Why are we doing it? To assist appropriate uses of that very restrained and restricted land. So we want to assist the appropriate uses, but we want to also discourage some of the abuses that are going on. People may be garaging their cars, etc., for longer periods of time. So it's trying to get it right. So that's the why. That brings me to the how, and I think because of the... I think we need to do this one with the community a lot closer than perhaps in some other areas. I think there are some very unique circumstances on North Stradbroke Oak Island that affect the parking as part of this transport solution. We've got closing of sand mining, we've got a changing of the workforce, people may be travelling to work and study, hence some real changing of transport habits and therefore parking habits as a part of that. With the state government's economic transition strategy, changing and evolving tourist industry, with both the workforce and visitors. So there is so many moving parts at the moment that the granularity of it on the ground is not as simple as just saying, here's our parking mapping area and let's try something. So the community consultation portion that I'm very particularly pointing to in this is really saying one size won't fit all in the mapping area on North Stradbroke Island or Toondah, and I'm feeling that we're going to need to work with comms and local laws and the councillor and the community to get some of these very granular areas correct, and any proposed regulation is correct and fit for purpose. Thank you.
Speaker against the amendment. Comment, Councillor Bishop.
Two. One is a minor point because I'm sitting in the chair that used to be occupied by Helen Murray, and she was a pedant for spelling. If we can just change the word endorsement to S-E-M-E-N-T, I think that's the correct spelling. So that's Helen, could be very grateful carrying on her work. But I think more broadly I'd just like to refer to the importance of the consultation. Parking obviously is such an important thing, particularly for people on the islands, and it does often when, as a local law, we are making laws that have to apply across an entire city. Now, it's a very big implement to make one law that applies across an entire city, and there are nuances that are very difficult to address without further becoming aware of some of those challenges. So I'd like to, and I also want to acknowledge that the council having a clear policy allows people to adapt to what might be a changed landscape. So it's very important that we are clear not only with what we intend, what our intentions are in terms of provision of parking, but we also need to be very clear about what that plan is going to be so that residents can take time to adapt. Sometimes those adaptations might be market related, sometimes they might be things that we do, but once we're clear, then individuals, and so I was talking before, other options can come up. Sometimes people, when the current parking situations, they might be used to them, but if there's going to be change, they're going to have to adapt. They might need time to get used to what those adaptations might be, and I think it's important that we do consult to ask what are those on the ground issues, and I'm certainly very aware on Stradi that there are many issues that really do need to be addressed, and I have no doubt that the same is the case on the other islands as well. So I support this absolutely.
Thank you, councillors. Question, Councillor Golley.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Maybe slightly not relevant here, but I'm going to give it a go anyway.
Not relevant. I prefer you just let us vote on the amendment.
Steady on.
This has to be about the amendment, Councillor.
No, it's about parking in general.
No. Well, we're not debating that at the moment, Councillor. You'll have to hold your horses. So we're voting on at this moment. We're debating just the amendment. Okay. So can we just hold it until we actually get this amendment sorted first? Thank you, Councillor. That's just the standing order. That's how it works. Okay, so councillors, if there's no further discussion, we're now voting on the amendment to be included as part of the overall motion. So those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. So now we can talk to the amended motion. You have a question, Councillor Golay?
Thank you. Given the success of the new opening of the RSL's new car park, and across the road is that open expanse of car park that they were using previously, I'm not sure of any sort of immediate future building that's going to go there, but is there a way that we could negotiate as part of this consultation with the RSL to use that car park across from the RSL for people going to Stradbroke Island at all?
So, Councillor, I appreciate you thinking outside the square. At the moment, we're just debating the local law. I think that's probably a question for the RSL, if it's their land, as I understand it. So I think we should take that one offline and we can have a chat about that. But at this point in time, we're actually debating the changes to the local law broadly. I appreciate your intention to make it easy for people as a result of the amendment that's in front of us. Any other speakers on this, councillors? There's no speakers? Councillor Mitchell, would you like to sum up? We're summing up the amended motion now.
Yeah, the amended motion. Thank you to the councillors for recognising that the consultation will be required.
All good. All right, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 12.6, making of local law 3, community environment and environment management 2015. Have I got a mover and seconder for that? A few items in that. Moved. Councillor Elliott, this is the local law 3, not animal management. So moved by Councillor Elliott, seconded by Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Elliott? Any questions or comments, councillors? Being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? Motion's carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against? Councillor Tolte. Item 12.7, making of various animal management local laws. Move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Golay. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari, or an amendment?
No, I believe there will be an amendment.
So, Councillor Elliott, you have an amendment to propose?
I do, Madam Chair, thank you. I move that the Office recommendation in the report is accepted, subject to retain the current local law application process to keep a third animal on a property which requires neighbours' consent.
The amendment is moved by Councillor Elliott and seconded by Councillor Bishop. We are now debating the amendment. Councillors, Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, really, I think it's straightforward, the process. I'm comfortable with what we have at the moment. It was discussed yesterday. I know this is over 6,000, but more than happy to have this in the urban footprint as well. I think it's going to, as we get more and more population, the pressure will be on. I've got issues with, 1,800 square metre normal block 20 years ago has three back neighbours now, and they've all got dogs, and we've got all sorts of things going on. So certainly I think we need to be tighter on our dog control. I'm a dog lover. I've had golden retrievers and cocker spaniels and all sorts of things. But certainly I think I know it'll be on the big blocks, and I'm sure Councillor Telfy will have a conversation on it. But certainly I think it's just a process that we need to go through.
I just think for some clarity on the amendment, what is being proposed is that we retain the third dog permit, which requires neighbours to be in favour of a third dog being kept before it can be approved. Just to be clear, because I don't think the amendment will give you that in a quick read, and that's to apply across the whole city. Correct? I'm just summarising what the amendment is. It's about keeping the status quo on the third dog permit. Thank you. Speaker against, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We originally considered the option to remove the requirement for people to go and ask permission from their neighbours based on a recommendation from our own department on the ability of
them to bring our local law. And the justification for many of these law changes through these reports is to bring us in line with the way these things are managed in other council areas as well. Making Mrs. Jones go and ask permission of her neighbours to take on her ailing mother's dog when she moves into a home does nothing but cause discord in the community. And it doesn't provide that there will be a better situation for anyone. All it does is make people feel that the law is asking something of them which is not reasonable, and therefore they won't follow it. I'm sorry. They will just take the dog in and they won't follow the regulation and they won't register it and they will just hope they don't get caught. And if we are going to make people feel like criminals in their own backyards, that is the purpose of this, was to upgrade our laws to represent current community values. And this does not represent current community values. It may have 20 years ago, and that appears to be where Councillor Elliott is drawing his life experience from dealing with neighbours, but this will not help our community.
Councillor Boglari, Speaker 4.
Yes, I'd just like to give my support to the amendment. With the way, especially, I'm just going to use my own house for example, I could have 15 dogs surrounding my house because I've got five immediate neighbours now with small lot housing and the blocks being broken up. So having recently been ill and confined to 1 week in bed and being woken up constantly by dogs, I do think, and I'm sure our compliance team will also support the fact that dog barking and dog concerns are one of our greatest issues. So if I support this, that if there is a requirement to have a third dog, I'm sure the process will be very compassionate like it is just now. I've had people who have had to have... a person who passed away and they did have to have a third dog, and it was pretty easy process to have that. So I think with our dog issues we're having across the city, that the amendment is very much applicable.
Just before I move on, I might just ask Graham to come forward, because my understanding is this, just in regards to who would require a third dog permit, what the change is, rather than me trying to explain it, because I don't think it gives a free-for-all to everyone for everyone to have three dogs, for example.
I meant Councillor Tolte used a compassionate example. I was just saying in those cases.
So not every house that live, not every house around one house would have free access to three dogs. It would still go through the process. Just get Graham to just explain that so it's clear on the public record, and then we can come back to the debate.
All right, thank you.
I know you've been looking forward to this debate.
Yeah, I have been. So essentially the process currently is that if you wish to have a third dog on your premises, you need to make an application for a permit, but before that application can be processed, it needs the adjoining landowner's consent. So essentially that's what the current local law says. So the proposal was essentially to not require that neighbouring landowner's consent in the first instance, and then essentially assess the suitability of the premises to contain three dogs, just by the way it's enclosed, and other factors that we consider. So that's it in essence. Yep.
Thank you. I just wanted to be clear, because I think some of the submissions came back just assuming that we have three dogs in every household. So I just wanted to get that clear. So Speaker... Sure. I think he just did that, but I'll do it. The only difference is getting... You can't actually get a permit without...
All of those things will still apply with or without this permit.
If we comment on that, Graham, then I'll go back to the speakers.
Yeah, that would be correct.
Okay, so we had a speaker for, speaker against, Councillor Edwards.
I can appreciate there's a lot of people would initially say three dogs, we don't want in our residential areas. I get that. This is a different process that is going to be, as Graham said, there's a lot of constraints around it. If there isn't the support from councillors to have this change, I'd be asking that perhaps we have support that there could be on special circumstances that officers have the ability to override an application that doesn't come in with supporting on with a neighbour or by exception. I also see that on a rural area, if you've got large properties and someone's got 10, 20, 30 acres or something, I don't see how this would even be an issue, why we should even have this for rural areas. But I do understand that there is contention around having it in a residential area, but if you've got a dog there for a care pet or something like that, that's only going to be there until it passes away, I think we need to show a bit of compassion. And the officers have actually requested us to do this, so they've actually seen a need in their past workings to have this change brought about. So that's why I'm not supporting the amendment.
Speaker 4, Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to support the amendment. Obviously, dog issues, and first of all, I'll say community consultation underpins everything we do in this council, which I think is wonderful. If someone wants to put a street light in a street, we go and ask the neighbours, and if one neighbour says no, we don't put that street light in. Here we have an issue with barking dogs in residential areas, and the very least we can do is ask the neighbours how they feel about it.
Sorry, this isn't about barking dogs, it's about a third dog permit, because barking dogs do see, there is compliance available.
Yeah, I agree, but I think the neighbour should be consulted on three dogs, and in rural areas it's probably just as important because dogs kill a lot of wildlife in those areas. So,
There's still compliance issues that officers will deal with. This is about the permit process, councillors. Yeah. So let's just bring it back to the debate.
I'm saying if we're not going to consult with the neighbours, then I just think that's something we should be doing.
Speaker 4. Councillor Bishop, Speaker 4. Oh, sorry, against, pardon me, against. Sorry. Councillor Mitchell.
Yeah, I'm a dog lover also, and I really don't have a dog in this fight, particularly, no pun intended. And personally, I don't want three dogs either, but I'm just not seeing the impacts just from the dog and this permit itself. It's across compliance, which isn't what we're talking about today, and I think technology is going to help with those compliance things. So I like to think that we make decisions based on the 98% plus that do the right thing rather than the 2% that don't, and probably less than 2%, quite frankly. And one of the most common statements I hear out there is government should just get out of the way sometimes, and I think this is one of those times. So if there's impacts, we need to discuss them. I don't think there's going to be a great big impact from this particular decision before us today. Thanks.
Councillor Bishop.
I think our role as representatives is to sit and consider the residents, and I think that's exactly what we're doing in this instance, is actually saying if there's a situation where local people think it's appropriate, then let's get that sorted out, and then they're up for the discussion. And I think that's a really responsible approach that encourages discussion among neighbours, because we know when there's a barking dog issue or when there are dog related issues that the first thing that happens is people close down and they don't talk. So I think it's absolutely an appropriate thing for us to implement this and to acknowledge the significant impact of a well managed dog in the community is one thing, and we also need to apply local laws, as I said before, across the whole city. So I wouldn't take the approach that sometimes government should get out of the way, because then we could just have, everyone could have any dogs that they want, wherever they want. I think there's absolutely a time when we need to be clear about it. And what we're doing in this instance is saying to residents, talk to your neighbours. Work out what's locally appropriate for you. And I think that's absolutely what this is doing. I think it's as we should support.
Question, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. It is very contentious and between neighbours, and we've all been called out to neighbourhood disputes. Through you, Mayor, to Graham, if a resident was asking neighbours for compassion to have a third dog and the neighbours said no, is there any availability for them on compassionate grounds to come to council and say, look, we've got this situation, have we had to deal with that currently? Because obviously the law's there now. So how have we dealt with that? Thank you.
I might ask Donna just to
clarify that point for us, whether we've had any circumstances that are along those lines. I don't think, my understanding is the local law wouldn't permit us to do that. So,
through you, Madam Chair. We have had instances in the past where we have declined third animal permits because the criteria hasn't been met. Like everything, there is an appeal process that the dog owners can come back and seek a further review of that decision.
Okay, sorry. So how does that then, how does that work out for him then?
Sorry, Councillor Bishop, at least then I'm hearing that our residents have had an opportunity for a second chomp, so to speak, a second opinion. So it's just not black and white. No, you can come back and ask for a review.
But the review would say,
well,
if you can't be able to agree, then you can't have it.
Well, that's the question I'm going to ask. How do we deal with an appeal of those decisions?
So under Local Law 1, any decision made by an officer can be reviewed. So if the team leader makes a decision and declines the application because it hasn't met the relevant criteria, then that gets escalated to a senior officer to review and make a decision based on that submission.
What are the on what grounds can a senior officer overturn an appeal? So I'm asking the question because I'm being genuine. I just want to.
Could a case be brought forward on behalf of a resident by a councillor seeking councillor endorsement to override that in a particular? Is that?
I know.
But I mean, honestly, our head needs to be up in the clouds with strategy. I can just see it now that we'll be spending our living moments in here, councillor, deciding on who can have a dog and who can't. That would be the problem.
Sorry, I was actually just responding to, is there a way? And I was suggesting that. Whether or not it's a right way, I'm just suggesting.
Ask CEO to comment.
Sorry, I'll just make a comment that my belief, and Donna, happy to be corrected, or Tony, that if that review happened, it would still have to occur within the context of the local law. And so Councillor Tolte, I believe, is correct in that if the application has not been correctly made, that it would have to be. I don't think there's scope for a senior officer to put a judgment over the local law.
Does that answer your question, Councillor Hughes, now? Question, Councillor Golly?
Thanks, Madam Chair. How does this apply to rental properties? And I'll use the example.
It applies across the board. I'm coming back to the amendment. We'll have another whole debate on the amended motion potentially. So,
not really amazing.
So we're actually just talking now about the permit process. Permit process for three dogs across the city. So, and that question's been answered. Any other comments, questions? So we're now voting on the amendment. To be really clear, it's about the process of three dogs, the application process, permit process. Those in favour? Those against? Okay, so those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop. Those against? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Williams, that has been supported, the amendment. So we're now debating the amended motion. Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Madam. Look, I'll only say that it is a contentious issue, but certainly if I look at if we agree to this, there's always going to be, look, I've had dog problems with one dog, you know, and I've had people sell up because the yappy little dog lives on. We couldn't solve it, you know. So I always err on the side of caution, and I try and this is, I think, a limit you need to have. Otherwise, we could, if the community said four dogs, and then we have four dogs, and then somebody has, I've got two dogs, and grandma's come to live with us, and she's got two dogs. There's a whole thing. You have to draw the line, and I can't the case of other councils are doing it, well, if all councils, you know, jump out the window, we don't have to do it. And I think it's common sense. Where it is, I think, is okay. And I think we are being compassionate in that. Yeah, we could say, look, it's two dogs and two dogs. But certainly, I think it's like a review. It's like parking fines. You know, somebody writes in, you can have a thing, they have a look at it, review it, but that's it. The law is the law. So anyway, the community, I'll say to the community behind me that you can see this. These are contentious issues, but I think I value every comment was made here today. And I think there was no rubbery sort of figures thrown around. And it's actually, we're genuine in what we do. And certainly, we're always going to have different opinions, especially on those things.
So just to be clear, we're not talking about whether people can have three or four dogs. We're talking about the permit process. You would still require a permit if it was a third or a fourth dog. It was just the process that we're talking about. I'll ask for a speaker against in a second, but that would be my concern as to how the submissions have come back to us, because when you read the 96 or so submissions, it's inferred that we're opening up the door for three dogs. That's how I read it. But anyway, we've got a speaker for the amended motion, speaker against the amended motion. No more speakers? Councillor Bishop? I would actually like to understand how this consultation occurred, and in particular, if I could, if there's no other speakers, because I know that there is a process, a legal process and requirements to how we consult on local law amendments, etc. So for those who haven't had a chance to read the hundreds of pages that have come through in local laws, once again, this was really relevant to the process of a fourth dog on large properties over 6,000 square metres, am I correct? And the permit requirements in that space. And I'd just like to have perhaps tabled way consultation occurred. And I appreciate perhaps the number, etc. And I know, Tony, you've been briefed on that, so if you could just... Cause my concern is the people who would have the impacts of these decisions have been the least consulted.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Council has an approved local lawmaking process with regard to community consultation, and that lawmaking process was adopted back in April 2017. And with regard to advising the community of the local lawmaking process, our requirement is that the advertisement gets placed in a newspaper generally circulating in the area. Now, with Redland City Council, we advertised in the Redland City Bulletin, and we understand that the Redland City Bulletin does not go to all areas within the community. So, Council at its meeting on the 9th of May 2018 asked that further announcements or further advertising be taken, and as such, notices were placed at the IGA Crystal Waters in Thornlands and also the IGA at Mount Cotton. Notice was placed in both those locations, as also the Victoria Point Shopping Centre, and recognising that the islands do not get the Redland City Bulletin, notices were placed at the ferry terminals for each of those islands. So included in that as well was Council's website, so the expanse was covered as much as possible, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Tony. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we were talking specifically about acreage areas, I can tell you from a perspective of Division 6 that that is inadequate to reach the people who live in acreage areas. Can someone please explain to me why, through the assessment for three dogs on suburban properties, we had the same objections come through because of the misinformation that was in the community about what was being asked for and assessed. Why was, on page 10 of the report, why was the objection able to be overcome for third dogs on suburban properties, but the same issue raised on the very limited number of extra licences that would have been applied for in the rural sector was not able to be overcome. I'm very disappointed with the way that this has been carried out, and particularly the assessment of the consultation. There's no logic or consistency to the way that the third dog versus the fourth dog was assessed, and the comments that were in the report by the officers, where they could easily overcome a third dog but they couldn't easily overcome a fourth dog on a large property. We have neighbouring communities that allow for people on large properties to foster dogs through shelters and to have, you know, house dogs and outside dogs, essentially. This is not something that was proposed to occur on every property everywhere. It was not something that was freely available. It would go through the same process for a fourth dog as a third dog. Other areas around us allow people to go through this process up to six or seven dogs or unlimited because they have faith in the community and faith in the process. So I cannot see any difference between allowing people to go through a process to ask permission to have a third dog and allowing them to go through a process on a large property to have a fourth dog. There is no logic to the way this has been assessed. So I won't be supporting it.
Any other comments, councillors? Conscious that Councillor Bishop has left the room. I guess if I can just stretch out the debate, to be fair, because to be fair, I don't need a rescind motion on this issue, because in my time here, I've debated animals way too many times, animal laws. I would question, and I guess I'd actually refer to another motion that was carried at the Local Government Association conference last week, that in fact the way that consultation occurs and the requirement to use your local newspaper, no offence to Cheryl sitting in the room, is generally becoming antiquated. For a start, when you're exposed to advertising classifieds, you very rarely would read the detail, and albeit that we can put it on our website, I appreciate that not everyone follows our website diligently, like people in the room, but I think there is a big discussion to be had at a state government level as to how we better consult. I think this particular consultation has failed those people who will be impacted, and I also think that it will be very difficult, and I'll just get a nod from the compliance officers as to how you actually seek compliance on really large properties, and we do have properties up to 100 hectares. It's really difficult to seek compliance unless it's generated by a complaint. And we talk about bringing the community together. The thing that, and Councillor Bishop was right, unfortunately, when you give people a stick and they have an issue with a neighbour, sometimes, hopefully rarely, they will use that local law for other reasons other than to achieve the outcome that is intended by the local law. So I am a big believer in not being creating laws just for the sake of creating laws on behalf of the community, because we have to seek compliance, but also making sure that our community remains a strong, connected, friendly place. There you go. All right. So with that, I've just was waiting for Councillor Bishop to come back into the room. Well, I could have taken the vote and given a casting vote, but I didn't think you'd appreciate that. So thank you. Would you like to sum up, Councillor Elliott?
Thanks, Mayor. Look, the consultation thing is one thing. I can remember many years ago, and Councillor Bradley was there at the Councillor Mitchell's division, we actually wrote to the people on North Stradbroke Island individually. I think it was 1,274, and people said, we never got the letter. So, you know, like, do you drag them out onto the street or to talk to them? I think this is, and Councillor Telly referred to, you know, 20 years ago, that's where I'm coming from, but certainly today we have the modern mechanism. If we have to, we can write to everybody. If consultation is going to be that, but I still guarantee you'll have people that never saw it, never got the newsletter, never that, and if they're not interested in people, it's about me. Everybody's about me. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
I'll put the motion. Councillors, those in favour? Against? Motion's carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Gollay, Hewlett, Elliott, Hughes and Bishop. Those against? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Williams. Thank you, councillors.
Moving on to 12.8. Councillors, this is the item that was brought from the table. Can I have a mover and second to move Councillor Ellie? I think Councillor Elliott's put forward a small amendment to be moved with it.
Thanks, Mayor. Can I move that item 7.
No, 12.8.
Got to get the right one.
12.8.
12.8.
With a minor amendment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Pardon me. I highlighted one bit but not the second bit. The council resolved to adopt POL 3076 expenses and reimbursement provision of facilities for councillors policy referred to in attachment one as amended by, and the amendments are, do you wish to read them out there? No, that's right. It's, and what you see in front of you. Thank you. Just a quick comment, just for the community, that the motion noting the reason for the minor change is part of the continued policy renewal and to align related vehicle fleet policy and telecommunication arrangements to leverage better sourcing costs and efficiencies. It's about better getting better deals. Thank you.
I've been waiting to speak to this one for a couple of years now, about 10, I think. Just for the community, Councillor regularly assesses properties of potential purchase under using our environmental separate charge acquisition, and this is to fund to maintain our city's biodiversity, in particular strengthen wildlife corridors. Bligh Street, Wellington Point, is one such property of extreme valuable environmental and heritage, actually, potential, and is located on the foreshore of Moreton Bay at the mouth of Hilliards Creek. The property consists of 4.5 hectares and it is adjacent to other properties which were actually purchased way back in 2005. So this is the first time this property has actually come on the market, so we were very lucky that Council was able to get it, because the properties all around it have now been amalgamated to form the internationally recognised Ramsar wetland, known as Jeff Skinner Wetland after a previous councillor. The site is worthy of Council's purchase as it represents significant habitat for a range of native flora and fauna, and over the last 10 years I have never visited this property once where I haven't seen a koala. And recently, with some significant planting, I believe, along the Hilliards Creek corridor, there's now a family of wallabies back down in the wetlands. And, of course, it is home to our migratory wader birds. So the latest purchase offers additional buffering against the for the protection of this endangered wetland ecosystem, with 80% of the property consisting of endangered regional ecosystem. And this type of ecosystem has actually been identified as critically limited within the wetlands, and the actual salt pans out there themselves are significant. So there's a matrix of regeneration and restoration that has been formulated by our council staff to rehabilitate this area to make it a facility for bird watchers, which is an increasing hobby for many people and is actually attracting people to our area throughout Redlands. So for me, this is also an economic development purchase for our area, because it's only about 15 minutes walk from Wellington Point Village, and it's a very easy walk along existing cycleways down to Bligh Street. So we're hoping that we can attract more tourists to our area, and they'll all stop hopefully for coffee and a cup of tea or lunch in the village. Wildlife enthusiasts also will be going down there with the wallabies and other life, and of course just plain walking in the area with interpretive signage to explain it. It's definitely going to be a wonderful relaxing area in the middle of a urban suburb, but plus also saving the environment. And the property is actually at the northern head of Redlands' main spinal corridor, and it contributes significantly to fauna movement throughout, all the way from Moreton Bay up to the south of the city. It's Hilliards Creek corridor, which is one of our enhancement corridors and has been given a highest priority in our recent in corridor enhancement program wildlife connection plan. So the actual benefits of it to the environment and tourism, economic development and everything is beyond question. Also in the report, you'll notice that we're doing a trial for actually closing off Bligh Street. This does not restrict access to any residents, and it's been something which residents in the area have actually been asking for 10 years. But while there was a private property down the end, we couldn't do this because every day there is hooning and other antisocial behaviour on this street. Especially after council grades it, the hoons seem to know and they come and dig it up. It's got to the point where you some local women won't even walk this area now. Recently, Debbie was saying to me she was accosted by foul mouth people down there, and they're feeling unsafe in the area. So by closing it off, we're hoping that it will spoil their fun and they will give these poor residents some peace of mind as well. The police are also in favour of it being closed off. And the ramp itself was used with small craft, but over the last probably 5 to 6 years, it's actually silted up. So it's only at an extreme high tide that you can now get access from the little ramp out to Moreton Bay. There's no dredging or maintenance work done in this area. Some canoeists still use the area, but they're mainly the locals who I've already spoken to, and they're quite happy because they trail. They have their little canoes on those trailers anyway, and there will be access for them to walk down and use that ramp when they want. So the trial of closing off the road, especially while the rehabilitation of the area and all the construction works going on, is also significant to bring some safety to that area.
Speaker against? Councillor Tolte.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Look, I'm a little bit disappointed that when we talked about purchasing this property, we had high hopes for. We were in the process of delivering Bayview Conservation Park, which has a car park, which has a gate on it, which is closed in the evening to prevent antisocial behaviour. We had visions of this area being able to accommodate a similar recreation opportunity for the community, to be able to have an allocated parking area that was not, you know, in the suburban streets. The report, I can't locate the point where it says it, but the report somewhere in here basically says the canoeists can drag their canoes 400 metres to the 340 metres to the access point because of the closure of the road. I have no problem with temporarily closing the road, you know, while rehabilitation works and further planning and all that sort of thing happens, but from my reading of this report, there's no plan to go beyond that unless there's some extreme objection from the community. But when we spend so much money enhancing and expanding the public recreation reserves, then we have to go beyond just what's there now and accommodating the people who happen to live in the street and might be happy to drag their canoes an extra 340 metres. I think we need to be able to say that we've spent this money to enhance the opportunity for people across the city to use these areas. And I'm not seeing a future plan which really speaks to bringing people into the area in that way. Thank you.
Speaker 4, Councillor Bishop. You'll get to sum up.
Thank you very much. We were talking earlier today about the size of land across the city that we do have to manage, and I think often the portions of land that are guaranteed to be retained fairly much in their natural state are along those waterways. I think this represents an important Redlands Coast opportunity for us to have a large stakeholding in an area where it is often, I think we do have conversations about koalas. It's an apex species. Obviously, it's one that's state protected. But there are many other indigenous creatures that are important, and it's nice to hear that those wallabies are there. And I think unless we have those larger areas, it does make it tricky for various species to continue their numbers and their growth, actually, and I think that's going to be important for the future going forward. I also think we need to the closing of the road, I'm pleased that that's something that's a temporary thing, and I do think it's worthwhile us keeping aware of what feedback we get from residents across a range of different... that's what I've heard, that it's temporary, and that therefore does what we've been speaking about earlier, is it allows an opportunity for consultation. Sorry, is there some... So the opportunity for us to consider, that will be a big change in the community, and I'm hearing the local councillor saying that that's a welcome change. If there are other views, this is now a space that is going to be in the community domain. The future use of it, I think it's very important before we go and bitumenise the whole thing and put a car park there, which is one extreme option that could happen. Depreciation, we heard about before, is probably a reason why we would not want to do that. On the other hand, leaving it fairly much as it is and doing some of what's reported here is cleaning up and making the site safe, I think, is really important. Either of the futures, now that it's in the public realm, is going to require a change of some use. The more we get people to use it without loving it to death, the better it will perform that environmental role. And I think how we balance access to a place like that, I do agree that the walking a significant distance with a kayak or a canoe might not be ideal, but how do we nuance this place? And I think I would very much encourage all of us to go out there and be very happy to go there with Councillor Borghlari to have a look at it so we can understand that a bit better. It's certainly a great opportunity for the Redlands Coast branding, but what that branding is going to be up to us to feed that back. So I think that I'd certainly welcome this. I know how hard Councillor Borghlari and many others have worked to look after this, but I also acknowledge that there's potentially a large cost associated with doing too much there, and it needs to be in line with community's expectations, so that feedback's going to be important. Thanks.
So just to draw you to some of the discussions around trials and temporary closures, page 521, item 2, property will be temporarily secured to exclude public access from any areas where establishment clean-up, make-safe or demolition-type works are being undertaken, and temporary signage will be installed to advise community works in the timeframes, etc. So just to make that clear. Moving on. Public access. So I'll just get... You'll get to sum up, Councillor. You will be able to do that in your summing up. Is there any speakers against? Any further speakers against? No? Over to you, Councillor Borghlari, to sum up.
Actually, I really welcome Julie's comments, because my vision for the area is Redlands Foreshore Environmental Centre for the whole of city, and so I'll be expecting your support at the budget allocation when I ask for it. At the moment, though, unfortunately, it's actually been confidential. We haven't been able to go out and have community consultation, and no
area should be developed or planned without community consultation. So I've been sitting here and keeping my lips closed because it's an exciting possibility of what could go down there. But at the moment, we haven't been able to talk to anybody. So, you know, I might have in my mind what I could see there for tourism and the environment, but until we know what the community want and need in that area, they're just my thoughts, and so we can't, you know, put them in a report. I've spoken to officers, and because this centre...
I appreciate aspirations, but...
Well, that's what I'm just saying. This is all we can do at the moment.
Correct.
So I totally agree with Julie. It should be for the whole of city, and it will be. Everything we buy is for the whole of city. But we can't come out with a huge plan now when we haven't even been able to break confidentiality around it. That's why I'm explaining that this report is just the basics. And now I'm just explaining why it is so important we do the clean-up, if I may. Previously, the residents who lived here have lived here for 35 years. But before that, Earl's father lived there, and he was the principal of the special school over at Wynnum. And so he used to bring the children to Bligh Street. So there's a lot of old chicken coops. There's a lot of sheds with asbestos in it. There's an old fish pond, which is foul. There's a lot of old buildings that have fallen down or are in unsafe. So there's no way we can have public just going all through it at the moment until that's tidied up. So it actually has been like an environmental centre before. It'd be great if it could go there again, but like I said, that depends on the community. So all we're doing at the moment is cleaning it up, making it safe, and believe me, I'll be coming back with more plans once we've done community consultation, asking for budget allocation to make it, you know, the best possible community asset we can in that area.
Thanks, Councillor. Just to be clear, this report doesn't talk about community consultation. This is just so there's no expectation that all of a sudden there's going to be a big consultation on this. The report is really...
No, but before anything happened on the area, community consultation, as per usual, would be required.
I'm hearing a lot of aspiration, and I'm worried people think that's reality. It's not that just at this point in time. All right, Ms. That's a sum up. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? It's carried unanimously. Councillor Edwards?
Oh, it's just really administrative. It's just really being able to gain access to water meters and services to leak there. It's an easement. There's been discussions with the residents. Everything's...
Any comments, questions, councillors? Councillor Hughes?
So I'm almost apologising in advance because I'm really sorry to say that when I read this officer's recommendation and the wording of it, I just really feel... it is lacking, and I'm uncomfortable with that. I know I've raised it before, and you've responded and said, but you go back and read the report. But when you read the officer's recommendation, it's saying, make, vary, and discharge all documents relevant to affecting this decision. What is this decision? If you don't, you know, you go back and read the report. We've got such lengthy worded officers' recommendations in other aspects, but on this one, when it's talking about land and easements, we just say to affecting this decision. Really unhappy with that. Thank you.
The CEO is just going to note that comment and take that on board. Thank you. Any other questions? Those in favour? Councillor, we know those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Okay, councillors, no mayoral minutes, notices of motion, urgent business, so we'll go straight to confidential items. Do we need to go into confidential, councillors? Anyone wishing to do that? If not, we can just move those motions as a matter of process. Councillor Elliott's moving 19.1, seconded by Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Bolglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Hughes, Tolte, Williams. Those against? Councillor Bishop. Item 19.2, moved Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour?
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Brings us to the close of our meeting, councillors, and thank you for your respectful debate today on matters that sometimes can get a little bit out of hand, and close at 11:17. Thank you.